is backed by popular demand, the very informative Charles Carlson of the website WeHoldTheseTruths.org. Hello, Charles.
Hi, Rick. Good to be back with you.
Thank you. May I call you Chuck or Charles? Which
you, either way, Chuck's fine.
All right. It's more informal, right?
That's what Mom always says.
Well, good. Welcome back to the program. I see your website is definitely a very interesting one, jam-packed with
a lot of
information. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, I know you don't necessarily agree with everything that's on it. You just put it on there for people's consumption. Just so people, like when they go to the rent site or any other site or our site, they'll get a smattering of the issues of the day and the different points of view.
Kind of that way, although we almost always put our slant on it.
Oh, I know that, yeah.
Yeah, we basically do a little review of every article we post.
Right.
That kind of tells where why we've got it there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think it's, but we quote Horetz and we quote a lot of very left-wing publications, and we also quote Al Jazeera and the European press and some of those. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we write our own Pharisee Watch every week.
Pharisee Watch.
Pharisee Watch is our own editorials, which we put out every single week.
Right. You know, there's a lot to talk about here tonight, a lot of meat in this plate tonight, so we'll get right to it when we start up after the first break. I just wanted to make people aware that, you know, you've been doing this for a while now, and, I mean, before the website, you were involved in reviewing these issues. How long have you been doing this exposure?
Well, we actually started the website 7 years ago.
Wow.
We started We Hold These Truths. By the way, the website is not WeHoldTheseTruths.org, but it's WHTT.org.
Oh, yes, right.
WHTT.org.
Right. Well, I got to it anyway, no problem.
You got it.
Absolutely.
But it's been 7 years, and I think there's about 150 of our own editorials on there, maybe more.
Uh-huh. And you've been in the field of reviewing things like the Scofield Notes and so forth for how long?
Well, a lot longer than that. We've, of course, been in other movements through time, and the biggest disappointment in our lives were to find when we found out that our churches really didn't support any of the things that we really stood for. They gave lip service to things like pro-life, but they didn't really support it. So
all right.
Our big change occurred when we started to realize that.
And we'll be talking about how Scofield has had a tremendous influence on the churches in America and the world today. We'll be back. Tell us a little bit about your own religious background, where you come from, and whether you're a minister or ordained or not. Tell us a little bit about you.
No, I'm a retired businessman.
Uh-huh.
And I came out of the the mainline churches, the old dead churches, these churches that we heard about that were around in the 1800s and didn't do anything in our country. Well, there were certain things going on then, and then they preceded the evangelical churches, and of course the evangelical churches have grown and have taken the place of the mainline churches as being the most dynamic growth churches.
Mm-hmm.
And I was raised in one of these Lutheran churches, and then ended up in an evangelical church.
Uh-huh.
and became a Baptist deacon and did all the things and believed and accepted. I accepted most of the things that we find to be so wrong today that were taught in the evangelical churches, the so-called Christian Zionist churches,
mm-hmm.
which is headed up by, of course, the Southern Baptist Convention,
mm-hmm.
and includes dozens, hundreds of thousands of independent churches that we hear so much about,
mm-hmm.
and all of these leading celebrities today with their huge growth populations of memberships, their multi-million-dollar enterprises, are basically teaching what was introduced into these evangelical churches back in the 1850s through, well, actually it was more like the early 20th century when it really took seed, and at the root of this was Cyrus I. Scofield.
Mm-hmm.
So he's become sort of an icon of the evangelical movement.
Yes.
But he's actually only a symbol for what's going on, because you now have huge numbers of clones, Scofield clones, writing their own Bibles, like John MacArthur.
Sure.
And there are literally dozens of these study Bibles on the market, and they all do and say about the same thing in a different way. Some of them go further than others.
Mm-hmm.
But they teach a form of Christianity that's really not Christianity, and when I was in the in those churches, when I was in the evangelical church, I belonged to two or three. I didn't realize that I was studying a religion that was really not Christianity. It was something else dressed up to pretend to be Christianity, but it was not. And this is something that we've become more bold about talking about. We've reached a place where we say that if you're attending an evangelical church, chances are you're being taught something that's really not, that is not very Christian. We have people calling us all the time, Rick, telling us that they're atheists, and the reason they became atheists was by going to church.
Yeah.
And then often they'll end up liking us, you know, and listening to us and talking to us because they say, well, this is sort of what I thought Christianity ought to be about, but I never found it when I was studying the churches.
Well, it's true, you know, and I've often thought that way myself, Chuck, you know, when I've looked and perused and just a simple, basic individual mind of my own, asking how can these so-called Christian people, these ministers, these gospel preachers, these theologians, whip up such a storm? One of the songs that comes to mind is "We're Marching for Zion." You know, that's what I call it, marching toward Zion. But anyway, how in the world can they say praise the Lord when some Zionist from New York decides he's going to go over to Palestine and take the land that belongs to somebody else who's lived on that land for generations, take them, and if they have to, kill them, you know, and take their family, throw them out, bulldoze their homes, and then you hear, praise the Lord, amen, that's God's will. And that sort of turned me off a long time ago, and I said, well, wait a minute now. If that's God's will, then what is Satan's will?
Yeah.
And sure enough, you know, I realized this was Satan's will, not God's will. And then you get the preachers who wrap themselves up in the flag. Usually it's the flag of Israel. And if America does not follow what the Zionists, particularly the Likud, has to say, then America is going to be punished, as we saw with Pat Robertson and we see with Jerry Falwell and some of the others. So all of this, to me, helps turn people off to the gospel, and it makes a mockery of Christ's whole purpose of coming to the world.
Well, we believe that it's very necessary to document extremely carefully exactly how this is done.
Yes.
In a easy to follow way, so that somebody who is fairly scholarly and says, I just can't believe this can happen. I can't believe this can all be false. How is this done? How are people fooled this much? You can't tell me that there's 70 million people that believe something that's completely unchristian.
I want to bet.
So we say, yes, you can. In fact, the bigger it gets, the easier it is to fool more people. And it's reached a critical mass now to where it's fooling all kinds of people into thinking that the president is a beautiful example of Christianity walking. And even when he says things that are not too Christian, and when he bombs and kills people and says that it's justified, it's still being defended from pulpits all over.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
So what our purpose is we have two purposes, really. One of them is to document very carefully how this is done so that someone who is really thoughtful can just doesn't want to go on their impulses but can look this and sit down and study and see from the various study Bibles and other books, the Left Behind books and others, just exactly how this was, the wool was pulled over our eyes,
yes,
so to speak. How did they do it to us? I really wanted to know. I couldn't live with myself till I found out how they did it to me.
I understand.
Yeah, do you have that feeling?
Oh, sure.
And so that's part of our purpose. And the other part of our purpose is that we think if you are a follower of Christ, if you really think you should follow Christ, and that's the path you're picking for yourself, and we don't say that everybody should feel that way. Mm-hmm. We talk to all kinds of groups, some of them don't have a single Christian in the audience. And we're happy to talk to them, and we talk to mixed groups that are, as I said, they say, I'm becoming an atheist on account of churches. But what we say is that you need to know what Christ really taught and what he expected of people, and then that makes it not so hard to make your mind up whether it's worth listening or not. So and then lastly, in these 70 million people that go into these churches are the salt of the earth. The people I got to know when I was in the evangelical churches were wonderful friends. They still are. And many of them won't talk to me, but they're still good friends. Others of them do talk to me and have come over to our way of thinking. And they are powerful people who are activized people. They want to do things. They want to raise good families. They want to they want to live in a good world, and they want to live a good life. And they don't want to be fooled. And so we have a chance to really change America if we can reach out and change these 70 million people who are completely on the wrong track. And if they only knew what was wrong with what they believed, they'd change tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
At least a lot of them would.
Yeah.
A lot of them. Well, I'm not saying everybody, because, Rick, you can't believe the things that are said to us in our mail.
Give us a little, for instance, some of the mail you get.
Well, I didn't stack any up in front of you, but very typically,
in a general
pastor
idea,
who I can just recall today wrote to us, and he said that we needed to bomb Iraq, and if it took the lives of children, then that's what's necessary, but we have to stamp out the evil around the world in order to make the world safe for our own children. So stamp out the evil around the world.
Sounds like George Bush, doesn't it? Huh?
Yeah, it sounds like George Bush. Yeah. And this is from a pastor, and he went on in considerable detail and ended up talking about Israel, how we had an absolute right requirement that we protect the state of Israel at any cost, and that was God's demand upon us.
Uh-huh.
And that he would burn our country like a cinder if we failed to do that.
Well, we've been doing that now for almost 60 years, and we've had nothing but trouble, nothing but terror, nothing but the burning down of America.
Yeah.
We've had nothing but hatred toward America, and hatred still persists from Jews, not just Muslims, but Jews who really and truly say that America is not doing enough for Israel. So, you know, it's hatred all around, and it's terror and violence and unhappiness, broken families. America is not a blessed country today. And part of the reason, a good part of it, is because of this, I think.
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
And
pastor wrote this, and he's typical of would you say, a goodly portion of people that are writing to you now? Or
well, yes, we aggressively approach all the leaders of the evangelical churches as best we can.
Right.
And we have programs to do that, and we go out and try to put our writings on their desk, even if we know they won't like it.
And now you're even picketing, right? You're even picketing some of them.
Absolutely. And, that is another wonderful example. Last Saturday, we picketed a born-again Christian congressman from the state of Arizona. This guy has only been in office 2 years, and when he went back there, he happened to be a friend of mine, and he was a friend of some of our board members. This is not such a big place, Arizona, you know, only 5 million people, 6 million people in the state or something, and we knew this person very well. He was a very strong pro-life individual. And claimed to be totally independent and conservative, Republican, Christian, evangelical.
And who is
his name is Trent Franks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he has a name, Trent Franks. Mm-hmm. And he's voted for the Patriot Act. He's voted for CAFTA, the thing that's it's a big boondoggle.
It's ironic because we hear so much from particularly from Zionists in this country. Rabid Zionists who say that we should have a strict separation of religion and state or church and state, unless that religion happens to include the embrace of the state of Israel as a religion and an article of faith, then it seems to be okay. Then it seems to be acceptable. Then it seems to be perfectly normal for that to be the case, rather than the howl of church and state separation. And that is the part that angers me so much, is here we've got my tax dollars being used basically to finance and nurture and support a religious state. Regardless of what they say, it is still a religious movement, the movement of Zionism, religious and political. And I object.
I agree. And
so where are all these great leaders, the Abe Foxmans and others, who say that they believe in church-state separation, no Christianity, no religion in public life, and then all of a sudden become tone deaf when it comes to Zionism, huh?
Yeah, you have to be. You have to be. You have to profess anyway Judaism to be in Israel. Although I've been there, and 85% of the people are said by their own people to be secular. They don't believe really in anything.
That's right.
So
that's
God,
true.
God has never had a poor stronghold in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
You can not find a more atheistic country.
Right. Yet the government uses religion and their version of the Bible to justify every move it makes.
That's right. But Rick, what their religion really is all about is a racist religion.
Yes.
It's not a religion, but it is a racism.
It's a false religion. Yes.
Yes. And that's also what evangelicalism or Judeo-Christianity, if you want to call it that, or mm-hmm. Christian Zionism
mm-hmm.
is all about. In other words, Christian Zionism is basically very deeply, it's steeped in racism.
Mm.
It's all about races being different. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the most supreme race is, of course, the chosen people who existed in the Bible at one time. If for those who believe the old Bible, there was a chosen people. And it was the Israelites who lived
right.
3,000 years ago,
yeah.
or four maybe, 3,000, a little over 3,000, I guess. And according to the book of Genesis, they were chosen by God. And what they were chosen to do was to bring forth a Messiah to their own people
mm-hmm.
when they became later totally corrupted. And that Messiah, of course, is believed by followers of Christ to be Jesus Christ. So the choosing of the chosen people was what they were chosen for. They were chosen to be the tribe that would bring forth the God person who was considered to be the Messiah of the Israelites, and of course is the God of the Christian faith. So this is what they were chosen for. They were not chosen to rule the world 3,000 years later. The state of Israel, or the Israelite people, they weren't really, there was no state of Israel at the time, 3,000 years ago. It was just a wandering tribe, and God did not appoint them to rule the world. But yet today, the evangelical church does. The evangelical church believes that this tribe essentially calls the shots for the whole world, and that everything pivots around them. And in their writings, you'll constantly read that everything pivots upon the state of Israel. Isn't that a common theme?
Mm-hmm.
And this congressman we referred to, Trent
exactly.
Rice, who we went. Now, what we did, Rick, is we went to his fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to visit a congressman, don't go to Washington, where he's surrounded by other congressmen and the people he pays to keep his office up, and a bunch of lobbyists who are there to give him money. Go
precisely.
To his hometown
right,
at the
right.
little neighborhood cafe or the cafeteria or the restaurant if he has a big bash, where he raises money at $500 at a time or $50 at a time, or in this case, $25 at a time at a breakfast.
Right.
And you simply go there with signs that challenge everything he does. And you meet him there in front of his best constituents, the people who support him and give him money, and you challenge them as to whether they really believe in what he's doing back in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do, and we have signs that we take with us to the congressman's fundraiser that say, blessed are the peacemakers, choose life, not war, because he's been for every war movement that's gone on.
Mm-hmm.
No more wars for Israel. Who would Jesus bomb? These are all very Christian signs,
yes.
and are very appropriate because this guy in your district is a born-again Christian. He says he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes to a church where they understand these things. They say they're pro-life. Well, why are they for war then?
Mm-hmm.
If you're pro-life and you believe the unborn child has a preeminent existence created by God himself, and that child has a right to live from it's very before he's born, then how can the little Iraqi child not have the same right?
You're asking
uh-huh.
tough questions, huh?
Yes.
They have no answers. All right, we'll be back with Chuck Carlson. Our guest is Chuck Carlson and We Hold These Truths. WHTT.org is his website. And while you're speaking about the situations around the Middle East and how America has contributed to them, I have this this email, and it's from the news service. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not, right from Israel, ynetnews.com. And the story is Nazareth Mayhem Dies Down. Now, this is something I haven't seen in any of the so-called American media reports. A Jewish man, his Christian wife, and their 20-year-old daughter enter the Church of the Annunciation in Nazareth disguised as pilgrims and then proceed to throw firecrackers. 13 police officers, 13 civilians hurt in the incident and ensuing violence. Police rescue family from a scene after 1 hour. Security sources, suspects not right-wing activists, a married couple from Jerusalem threw firecrackers in the Church of the Annunciation on Friday after entering the compound disguised as pilgrims. The couple was identified as Haim Habibi, a Jewish man who was known to police, and his wife Violet, a Christian. Their 20-year-old daughter also entered the church, and according to what we have as far as the reportage that's going on here, Habibi and his wife entered the church with the firecrackers and gas tanks hidden in a baby carriage and proceeded to set off the firecrackers once inside. Shortly thereafter, hundreds of Nazareth residents arrived at the scene while chanting death to Jews. They caught Habibi and beat him while slamming his head into the ground. Now, you know, this is the sort of thing that is growing, obviously, in incident and also in frequency. And, most people have no idea in the outside world that there are Christian churches still there in Nazareth trying to survive this onslaught. And many of the Palestinian people are Christians today. They are not all Muslims. A lot of people don't know that, including many of these Zionist Christians, you know?
That's exactly right. I could relate to you a similar story that's just come out of Gaza.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Gaza is only 20 miles long, and I visited there and spent time there, and it is basically a prison, 20 miles long and about 3 miles wide on the average, only 600 square miles, the size of a small American city, really, with 1,300,000 people crowded in there trying to live there, and even raising their crops there and attempting to support themselves, and many of them in refugee camps. Less than three years ago, when I was there, I walked all over the place all by myself. I visited three Christian churches, mm-hmm. and talked to a rector in one, and wasn't able to talk to another, but there was a Baptist church there,
mm-hmm.
and the very devout Baptist people were Arabs, and right next door was the mosque. They lived right next to the mosque,
mm-hmm.
and we have a program where we show that. We show the church next to the mosque, and a female American missionary women lived there. There were only 1,500 who were in Gaza. That's Christians, but it's one of the most Muslim places in the world. But these ladies drove their little old car all over Gaza City, all by themselves, in among the teeming traffic, without the least bit of fear of their neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
All these Muslim Arabs all around them, mm-hmm. and these ladies had no more fear of them than you would have driving around a better part of Chicago, not the worst part of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's changing because you now have incidents like the one you described with the firecrackers where people are agitating.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now you have hotheads who are starting to say Americans are to blame for all our troubles. And so Americans are not quite as safe as they were, and there have been some incidents like that.
And, of course, the tourism has gone down tremendously.
Yeah, now the evangelical churches have a solution to that. They never look at the Arab territory. They simply run these mega-dollar tourist trips into mm-hmm. places like Jerusalem,
right?
And they take them on junkets, basically, where they only go where the Israelis want them to see,
mm-hmm.
and they never get near an Arab. They never have a chance to see an Arab family, to see an Arab ghetto, to see talk to an Arab child, any of the things.
Although
that
many of the laborers in these hotels and tourist areas are Arabs who are basically, living at starvation wages.
That's true, Rick.
Yeah.
But they have to toe the line because they lose their job at the least provocation.
They know they can't say anything, right?
Yeah, they don't dare talk to the the tourists. They don't dare say much unless, you know, it's just hard for them.
Yes, yes.
Because if they lose their job, there may not ever be another job for them.
Now, you know, the ironic thing about this, to be fair, and I consider myself a very fair person to the best of my ability. You know, we get these stories that come out, and you alluded to Haaretz in particular, left-wing paper, and, you know, there are some people who in Israel today are not walking in lockstep with the Ariel Sharon Likud Omer party. You know, they are building, you know, bridges, if you will, because of what's going on now, what's happening with the destruction of the olive groves, what's happening with the, you know, the destruction of the property, taking them off their lands and so forth. The uprooting that's taking place has brought together a number of Israelis who are very much walking in lockstep with the Palestinians. And, of course, the government of Israel will just as easily do away with them as it has been doing with the Palestinians. I mean, this, you know, they don't discriminate in that regard. They will kill Israelis if it serves the greater cause, and they have done that as well. So just a note that these, you know, these Arabs, these Bedouins whose lands Israel continues to destroy and spray dead with chemicals, many of these are supposed to be Israeli citizens, and they are not nationals. They're a distinction valid only in Israel, where a, quote, national, say, as opposed to a mere citizen, is reserved for Jewish Israelis only, you know, as an apartheid or basically a supremacist state. So what we're seeing there is this movement grow amongst the anti-Likud Israelis, and they're joining hands with the Palestinians. And this is also happening at a time when we see the Sanhedrin Council now beginning to emerge again with the Shabbat Lubavitch sect and others that seem to be bent on doing exactly that, creating this temple and building up to the moment when they can resurrect the temple once again.
You're exactly right, and there are a lot of people in Israel, a significant number of people in Israel, who are absolutely opposed to the occupation of the Palestinian lands. They're opposed to the settlements, so-called settlements, which are nothing more than squatter camps stealing more property and more olive orchards.
Yeah.
And they're absolutely opposed to that and say so. And these movements are quite strong in Israel. What's holding the whole thing together is the American Evangelical Church.
Yeah.
The American Evangelical Churches are pumping tens of million dollars of tourist dollars into these Israel junkets every year.
Right.
It's basically a multi-billion dollar thing, and it's basically the turning point that's keeping the Israeli economy afloat. The money that's actually raised by evangelical movements that's going to Israel, and then the influence that they have over people like our Congress, Congressman Franks, others, many like him, who essentially are Israel first congressmen. This is what's keeping the war going. This is what's imprisoning the Palestinians. And they know it. They know that it's the American dollars that are doing the damage to them. And then, of course, the U.S. foreign aid dollars pay for the weapons that the Israelis carry. So you might say that the luxury dollars of our evangelical tourists keep their business afloat, and the U.S. taxpayer funds them for the weaponry that they use all the time against the Palestinian people. Weapons of mass destruction used every day against Palestinian people somewhere. And I might also comment on this church bombing. Listeners should not
be
quick.
You mean in Iraq?
Well, the one that you referred to with the firecrackers in the church.
Okay, yes.
The church bombings in Iraq are very suspicious, and there's a lot of reason to think that quite a few of those bombings are probably false flag operations designed to create the same illusion that the firecrackers create.
Yep.
It causes hatred, it causes dissension, it causes retaliation, it causes civil war.
You divide them and you get them fighting, and then you've conquered them. That's exactly the modus operandi of the globalists.
Exactly.
No question about that.
And these people with their firecrackers knew what they were doing.
Oh, yeah.
They were spreading terror.
Well, you know, I'm always suspicious, and I've learned to become suspicious when I see these reports and hear them. And, you know, I always say, who benefits? Qui bono? And then where's the proof as to who's really been involved? You know, it doesn't benefit either party in Iraq, the Sunnis or the Shiites or any of the others. By the way, the Christians have just about been wiped out now in the absence of Saddam Hussein, where they were protected. But it doesn't really give them a green flag, that is, either side, to wipe out each other. As much as there have been ethnic rivalries and religious splits, these people under the government of Iraq and Saddam were never allowed to engage in this kind of wholesale alleged ethnic cleansing that we see today. All of this has happened only after the neocons and George Bush, with a Bible in his hand, said, God told me to invade the nation of Iraq. Only now are we seeing all of this bloodshed and this absolutely unnecessary carnage taking place.
Well, we think that this Christian movement is the focal point where we really need to concentrate. This is our purpose, and we enlist others to help us to start challenging churches, church leaders, because if churches would change, the attitude would change. This a lot can be done. This is the area that should change and where there is a chance of a turning. But we're not going to change a lot of. There are a lot of people we're just not going to change. You're not going to change the minds of quite a lot of the really hard rock people. But in the evangelical churches, we should be able to change people's minds. We do it every day. We see it happening.
And you know, the one of the other reasons you might not meet with success with many of the preachers, especially, is because they've been given a lot of gifts, and there's a lot of money that comes along with this prestige, you know, of supporting the Zionists in this country. Jerry Falwell's got his Lear jets, you know, they've got all of their money, their donations that have been given to them, their respect in the media because they kowtow to whatever Israel wants. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you look at the money they're attracting, the houses they live in. Whether it be John Hagee or any of the other Zionist leaders in the so-called Christian movement, they are really profiting immensely and doing quite well.
Yeah, the Crouch family is supposed to have 20 homes, not rented to poor people, but for their own pleasure.
Yeah, yeah.
And we received a letter today. You're speaking of Jerry Falwell. We just happened to see a letter today that came in from somebody who lived 70 miles from where Jerry Falwell is in Lynchburg, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And he said, I saw where you were there one time picketing the Liberty Baptist Church, and if you ever do come back, he said, I'd like to join you, and I'll get some people from our neighborhood to come over there and help you picket Jerry Falwell's church. And we did picket Jerry Falwell's church once, and then we went, and it's not called Liberty. His university is Liberty. We picketed Liberty University on another occasion when they had a big conference there. But his church is Thomas Road Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry has expanded the church so much that his front step is actually built on public property. It goes out and kind of laps over the sidewalk a little bit. And we were allowed to stand on his front step because the police didn't much care for him anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And when we had the police come and we asked them if the right-of-way didn't include his front step, and they said, yes, by George, it does. He built his front step on the right-of-way. So we were that close to Jerry's church.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jerry doesn't come out and meet with people.
No, he invited us in if we would listen to him and shut up, but we didn't go.
Right. That's interesting. You know, we're going to get into more of this as we continue with the program, and we'll invite callers now if you'd like to ask a question of our guest, Chuck Carlson, and his website. The number is 800-313-9443. We'll take your calls after the next break, but I'd really like to get back also into Schofield's influence, Dr. Schofield, and his life in the previous centuries, and how it had such an influence, and who was behind him, the money behind him, and so forth.
Cyrus I. Schofield, we believe, was basically a pen pal, a ghostwriter for the Zionist movement.
Yeah.
And that he basically was writing a book on Christian Zionism to be used in a generation later.
Mm-hmm.
And this book was written in 1908, about the time just before the Balfour Declaration.
Yep.
And he was very much influenced by powerful American Zionists. In fact, he was probably owned by them. And his writings are what's important. It's not so important what his history was, which is very interesting, but and shows a lot. But what's really important is how he went about writing this book. And from the writings themselves, you can see that the Zionists actually had to have written it, because he wrote things that he couldn't possibly know, but they knew about the new state of Israel that was going to be created, and about the way they were setting people up to cause them to believe that the state of Israel was supreme in the future. That was back in 1908 that this was being done.
And of course, since then, we know all of the theological cemeteries, as I call them, have grown and to record numbers, where they are teaching that very Scofield Bible, that very theology, from Moody to Dallas to all of these theological seminaries that are preaching and teaching this philosophy and inculcating all of the young would-be ministers into accepting this theology that then they will take forward to the pulpit and to television and the ministries and infect the entire nation with it.
Exactly. That was exactly how it was done. It was done through the seminaries. And the Scofield Study Bible was promoted through the seminary.
Right.
Do you have time before the break to look at any of the examples, or should we wait till?
Well, I think we're just about a minute away now from the break, so why don't we just prepare that, get people on the lines, and then we'll do that when we come back. How's that?
Very good. And we'll talk about Genesis 12, the first.
People can get to your website simply by clicking on, and, you know, we talked about weholdthesetruths.org, and I, you know, all you have to do is just type that in the search engine. That'll get you there, obviously.
Yep.
But the abbreviation is pretty simple, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It is. It's www.whtt, for weholdthesetruths.org, and that will bring you right to our site.
Excellent, excellent. And by the way, the articles on your site do range from, you know, the New World Order to the latest Bush speech to violence around the world. Everything.
Federal Reserve and gold.
Federal Reserve and abortion, pro-life, all of these things. Chuck, go ahead. Did you want to go through that litany of items now, and then we'll take calls? Why don't you do that, Chuck?
Well, I think a little example here. People, when you tell people that you have a whole religion deceived by a book, they really want to know, how can that be? And I did.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a Scofield Study Bible. This is a 1967 edition, but the first one was in 1908.
Mm-hmm.
We've studied the changes that were made from 1908 to 1967. And the listeners ought to know that this was not really written by this man Scofield as much as it was by someone who, unknown party, that was owned by Oxford University Press.
And wasn't it copyrighted by them?
It was. They owned it right from the very start.
Right.
Scofield became wealthy on the royalties he derived, but right from the start, the book had a crowd of very proper evangelical seminarians and Bible college leaders, including the Moody Bible Institute, who basically swore to it. They essentially were on the editorial committee, and this gave it credence and allowed the Oxford University Press to go into the seminaries in America and place these Bibles in the hands of all these young pastors. And I suspect they gave them to them, or maybe they gave them big contributions for buying them. I don't know what they did, but the book was remarkably successful in entering in at the level of the young pastor, because the Zionist movement was planning for something that was going to happen 40 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had time to go to the seminaries and teach the people that would be teaching the students later on. And they took this very intelligent approach in doing that. And these Bibles were beautiful and very, very expensive. Some of them had such beautiful leather covers that they're still preserved today. You can buy them in a used bookstore, and quite often they're serviceable after 40, 50, 60 years. One of the places that they concentrated was on creating the idea that there would be a state of Israel in the future that would dominate the world. And one of the first important places that they went to prove this and to create the land of the state of Israel was in the book of Genesis in the 12th chapter. And this is the story about the encounter between God and Abraham, where Abraham was visited by God, and God told him that if he would leave his family and go out into the wilderness, that God would protect him, and then from him would come a blessing to all of the families of the earth.
Right.
And that third verse, the 12th chapter, the third verse reads this way in your Bible, "And I will bless them that bless you, and curse him that curses you," speaking of Abraham, "and in thee all of the families of the earth will be blessed." So this was a promise that Christians have taken as meaning that there would someday be a Jesus. And in Jesus' time, the followers of Jesus pointed back to this and said, here is where God promised the coming of the Messiah for the first time, maybe the first time. Well, let me show you what Oxford Press did to those words.
Go ahead.
All right, here's what they say in the footnotes. Now, the footnotes are much bigger than the text, but they say God made an unconditional promise of blessing through Abram's seed to the nation of Israel to inherit a specific territory forever. So now you're having them say that God did not promise a Messiah, but he promised real estate.
Exactly.
He promised a piece of real estate to someone forever.
We're talking right now about the Schofield figure in the history of the church and what happened when the verses of Scripture were changed by Dr. Schofield at Oxford Press. And, Chuck, before we get into these calls, that was just one small example of what he did and what they did. There were many other examples of where he rewrote the whole Scripture, didn't he?
Yes, he did. There are 1,300 pages, 1,375 odd pages in this book, and more than half of it is his footnotes.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them are just trash. They just are something to keep you busy and keep you really thinking about the Scriptures themselves.
Right.
But in a lot of places, there are very precise and pointed efforts made which absolutely mislead people, and those are the ones that are concentrated on today. So when these pastors talk about the right of the Palestinian people to have no right to have land in Israel, they go right back to Genesis 12. If you meet one and ask them, where do you get this? They'll say Genesis 12. It says that Israel has a right to the land. Well, it doesn't say it in the Bible. It says it in Schofield's footnotes. It even says this. It says, it introduces the idea of Jews at the time when there were no Jews, and it says in footnote number 3 at the bottom of the page on the same in the same tract, it is invariably fared ill with people who have persecuted the Jew, and well with those who have protected him. For a nation to commit the sin of anti-Semitism brings inevitable judgment. Now, where does it say that in the Bible? The answer is it doesn't say it at all.
I know.
And this passage about Abram and his visitation from God doesn't say anything about the Jews, because there weren't any Jews at the time.
No, that's right. That's
there
exactly.
was no state of Israel at the time. And it had nothing to do with anti-Semitism, which was a word that wasn't invented for almost 2,000 years, over 2,000 years.
And to use the terms Jacob's seed or Israel, which was renamed Israel, as you know, interchangeably with Jews today, is absolutely nonsensical. And
yes, it
is anti-scriptural.
The man named Israel wasn't born for three generations after this conversation took place.
And yet, these notes, as you have pointed out, have been the basis for teaching in theological schools, where these ministers come out like wind-up dolls and robots, entering into the pew and the pulpit and going into the camp meetings and preaching hellfire and brimstone. God forbid if church does not support Israel and the state of Israel since 1948, that church is in deep trouble with the Lord, and our country is going to go to hell because it doesn't give Israel everything Israel wants. And, you know, this is the theological seminary.
It is
outrageous.
Yes, it even makes a prediction. Schofield says the future will still more remarkably prove this principle. Now, I should also point out that this footnote was added to the Schofield Bible after the State of Israel was created. It wasn't in the original 1908 edition.
No, of course not. No, that's right. And also, you know, you see the practical political effects. We saw Vice President Quayle, his wife Marilyn, get heavily involved with Baraka Church there in Houston. And Bob Thieme, you know, who put out book after book after book about the age of grace, the age of the church, the age of, you know, the Jews and so forth. And it's all dispensationalist Scofield theology. And they claim to be rightly dividing the word of truth. So here you have a vice president at the time, you have his wife, you have these people heavily involved in this, church crusade for Zion, if you will, and nobody said a peep about it. They loved it. They thought it was just marvelous. Mike in Kentucky. Hi, Mike.
Well, I'd first like to say I think we are so conditioned not to even discuss these topics in polite company that you have to be suspicious of the very conditioning. You know, where does that come from?
Yeah.
Where? You know? It reeks.
Took like a century of conditioning.
Of psychological operation
that's
been orchestrated for who knows how long.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So how come we can't explore these topics? You have
to ask yourself
that.
Why does even exploring these topics invoke so much knee-jerk, vehement, you know, vile, vulgar, vinegar in so many people that they can't even rationally talk about it? Oh, you're a Nazi.
Well, I think I can answer that from a lot of trips to churches.
Mm-hmm.
If someone does not have an answer for what you say,
mm-hmm.
you're gonna get some sort of an angry retort, because nothing makes someone madder than to be in a spot where he has no answer whatsoever for what's presented to him, and where it makes sense to him on the surface, and yet he's trained to think exactly the opposite, and he doesn't know why. So.
It's conditioning. It's
conditioning, and it is there. But it's also a good sign, because when you have a lot of people who are that way, they're on the verge of changing. They're going to think in spite of themselves, and it only takes a little spark in some cases, in the smart cases, to cause people to start thinking. So we're at that spark.
Well, I like the name of your webpage, weholdthesetruths.org, because you should appreciate the quote from Thomas Paine, "He who dares not offend cannot be honest."
That's certainly true.
All right, Mike. We appreciate your entering the program tonight. Anything else?
Yeah, there was. I'd kind of like to vaguely thank certain pastors for tolerating my exploration of this catacomb of hidden truths. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think we all try people's patience when we look into these type of topics, but
we do.
One of the things that really bothers me, though,
what's that?
The quote, and I'm trying to remember where this scripture is, but to whom much is given, much is required.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I understand a lot of this stuff that you guys are talking about. It really weighs heavily on me. Gee, what? since I've been given or revealed a lot of these ability to understand these concepts, what does that mean? What action do I need to take?
That's a wonderful thought. That is the essence of Christianity. You've just put your finger on it. What is required of me? And as soon as you ask that question, you're on the way to solving the problem. You'll find the answer once you ask that question.
Well, I'm kind of being rhetorical. I'm kind of being rhetorical here to the people that are listening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I come from an area where we actually declared our independence from the crown before. The Declaration of Independence. There's a book called Stinking Creek that mentions that. And there was a group of people in the Appalachian Mountains that declared their independence before the Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think if the New World Order wants to mess, you know, with us, they'd better look at our history.
Well, very well put, Mike.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you for the call. You know, Chuck, you also said something that it was good to clarify, and that is to whenever somebody can't argue with you, they just call you names and use those charged killer terms, you know, like bigot, anti-Semite, and so forth. Just yesterday, in fact, from my local public access cable TV show, we had a woman call who objected to the fact that we exposed Zionism and what it represented. And all she could say was, you are wrong, Mr. Adams. The Zionists do not have an agenda. There is no agenda. And when you see that and you realize what you're saying is totally wrong, you will come to the truth and you will recognize that you are deceived. Now, nowhere did she offer a specific example of what she was talking about or any refutation of what we were saying on the program. It was just a hit-and-run type of feedback comment, you know?
That's
but
right.
This is what you're talking about.
That's right, and that's the reaction you'll have to have before you have change. And so the change is coming. What will happen, how we'll face it, what will become of us, we don't know.
Yes.
But believe me, the change is coming, and people are standing up, and their ears are starting to stand up, even if their bodies are not.
Yes, and I believe also not only the change is coming, but Jesus is coming too. And when he comes, he's going to set the record straight, and you don't want to be on the wrong side of the issue, that's for sure.
Yeah, right. Well, he's already here, so.
And he's coming again to establish his kingdom, remember. All right, John in New York, you are on the program with our guest, Chuck. Yes.
Hi, Chuck. I was having trouble hearing the radio tonight, but at the same time, in the Bible it says the land of God will not be purchased by man, and I'm assuming that as this reproportionment of the earth as this planet X is coming by is going to bring a continent out of the ocean that's not purchased by any man because it's virgin soil. And does that work into your text at all? Or
it doesn't with me. I don't quite know. I'm not quite familiar with the passage. I do believe this. God is not in the real estate business. God is he owns the real estate, and he was not a schlock landlord of Mediterranean beach property, passing it out to a certain race 3,000 years ago. That was not his concern. And his concern was the minds of people, minds
salvation,
the salvation of souls. Right. That's right. So. By the way, I might tell you that we have an interactive presentation that's live on recorded on our website, where you can go through the Schofield presentation and see quite a bit of the Schofield quotes for yourself.
Uh-huh.
And it's under audio visual on our website. You just find audio visual or listen live,
mm-hmm.
and go there and look and scroll down to the special presentation. And it's by me, and it's interactive. It's got the pictures, it's
right.
got the sheets, and all of the stuff, and it's a good lesson plan, so we don't have to dwell much on the verses, but
the context, okay.
But it's interactive. That's the thing, so people can participate in it.
It's voice, it's sound, and it's visual.
Video, yeah.
Yeah, so it makes a complete presentation.
Okay, good. John, any other questions? We'll move along, if not.
No, I'm all set. I appreciate
all right.
it. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you very
lot,
much
John.
For your call.
1-800. I'll find that spot out in wherever it is.
1-800-313-9443. Yes, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, right?
Right.
All right. Jeff in Texas, you are next. Hello.
Hi, Rick. Hi, Chuck. A quick experience I had. I confronted a dispensationalist and pre-trib rapture author Dave Hunt in person a few months ago.
Yes.
And talking to these people really is an experience in learning the effects of brainwashing. Not only did he preach that the Jews were the chosen people to the audience I was in, but he also actually beseeched the audience to find anybody they knew that might have an acquaintance with a general, a military general that would endorse his book. And this is, you know, a blood-washed Christian, you know, mm-hmm. that's supposed to be a pacifist, a peaceful person asking for generals to endorse his book. It made me sick.
Yeah.
But you share verses with these people, like Romans 9:8, where it says the children of the flesh are not the children of God, or Hebrews, I think it's 8:13, where it says the old covenant has vanished away. I mean, it's an absolute waste of time. It goes in one ear and out the other.
Not until they're ready, and of course they'll take you right back to Genesis and talk about the land being coming for that, and a lot is based upon Matthew 25 and total misinterpretations of that too about heaven and hell.
Well, I commend you for your work and keep it up.
Okay,
thank you
Jeff,
very much.
Thank you for your call, Dorothy in Florida. Hi, you're on the program with our guest Chuck. Mm-hmm.
Yes, gentlemen, I was just hearing you speaking now in light of the eras that are in the Scofield Bible, what Bible would you recommend that one would use in order to get the correct biblical understanding that they need?
Good question.
I think Rick probably has his thoughts on that, and I'll tell you what we generally say.
Well, I don't use any reference Bible or any commentary Bible. I just use the standard King James, and when you get into the, you want to get into the real words of Jesus, now you're getting a little bit more advanced, and that's for another program. But I don't like commentaries, and I don't like to read any commentaries, except just getting into the verses of Scripture and the references that are noted for cross-referencing the Old and the New Testament. That's my short answer to a long question. Yours?
I agree completely with what Rick has said. We teach a class on the New Testament. I don't do it, but I participate in it every Wednesday night. And we strictly read the New Testament chapter by chapter, and we don't use any reference Bibles at all, except to help us understand what someone's trying to make us think. Because it's important to know what someone's trying to make us think. So we keep the reference Bibles around for that purpose.
Right.
Get a New Testament without any footnotes in it and no italic lines between the lines.
All right. And, Chuck, we got more calls, but let's go back to Dorothy, okay? Dorothy, are you still there?
Yes, I am, and
all right.
Thank you.
You asked a good question, Dorothy.
No, there has to be, some publisher or something wherein I can go and get a Bible.
Well, Dorothy, there's a terrific problem among the Bibles being bought out by secular houses.
Mm-hmm.
Rupert Murdoch owns Zondervan,
yeah,
which is one of the biggest Bible publishing houses in the world. And of course, he's a pornographer, is anything but a Christian. So you have to be very careful about changes that are made. But that's not the big issue, because God's Word shows through in the New Testament. If you read the New Testament, you'll get the idea. What
but
you have to avoid is
Bible
footnotes and
which publisher.
Pardon?
But from which Bible?
Whatever
which
one you have, it doesn't really make. It doesn't matter as long as it's only the words. You don't read the footnotes. Don't worry about the footnotes, or the italics print that the publisher puts in between the verses. Those are put there to guide you. You don't want to pay any attention to those. If you have a Bible that has italized headings between the lines, just go along and scratch those out as you go and pay no attention to them.
What about a good concordance, though?
And a concordance is helpful to have.
Right.
It tells you. And I also like to read some of the modern versions of the text, because the King James Version reads kind of hard for me.
Right.
And I sometimes like to go back and look at something real easy.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ideas do come forward. God gets his word out there if you just give him a chance.
Oh, I really believe that. But, on one note concerning Israel, we do know that the Lord did tell Abraham, as the stars of the heavens and as
mm-hmm.
the sands of the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And those are two, different spheres there. And I will always believe that the Lord has given the Jews earthly blessings, wherein he has given the church spiritual blessings, because Israel is in
mm-hmm.
spiritual blindness. Just as we as the church, we see through a glass darkly, but one day he will make both one new man. So I just wanted to know, was there any further study I could do as far as...
Dorothy, all I can say is you got to be careful when you start going down that slippery slope of dividing church from Israel and so forth, because a little bit of Scofield creeps into many churches who think they're not Scofieldites. You have to be careful. And once again, we urge you, go back, just read the Bible for what it says, and then look up the words and what they mean with a good concordance. That's a good beginning. Don't take the Scofield Bible.
Oh, yes, I'm a student of God's Word, and I have a concordance,
right.
And I have been for years. So
all right.
I just thought there was something new that you had to add.
Okay, thank
you
very much.
Very nice to talk to you. And,
all right.
And you're welcome to join in on Wednesday night if you'd like to listen in to the way we do it, and it might give you an idea.
Yeah,
it's right. It's right on the air at 7 o'clock. It's 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time every Wednesday evening.
Great, great. All right, Dorothy. Good call. Very sincere call.
Thank you,
call.
Dorothy.
Let's take a call from Bob in Virginia. Hello, Bob. You're next.
Hello, and good evening to both you and Chuck, and thank you for letting me be on the program.
Sure.
I just discovered your program tonight, as a matter of fact.
My goodness, there's always new discoveries. Huh?
Oh, yeah. I'm also a ham. My call sign is KN4CF, and I'm heard on the 80-meter band. Used to be heard on there quite a lot.
All right.
But what I wanted to talk about was I wonder if you are familiar with a book entitled The Incredible Schofield and His Book by Joseph M. Canfield.
Oh, yes, he is.
Yeah. All right, very
good. It's a wonderful book. We sell it. And we recommend it. It gives the history, and you're probably about to tell us this, but so I don't want to preempt you if you want to say something about him. But he was a criminal. He had a criminal background. He stole, he lied, he cheated, and he was a perfect man for the Zionists to find to do their ghostwriting for him because he knew how to keep
the secrets. A lot of skeletons in his closet would come out. Yeah,
and he was probably selected for those bad habits because he knew how to keep a secret.
Yeah.
And he never breathed a word of what he was taught by the Zionists until the day of his death.
Yes, right. And he, in fact, he divided his life into two cells. On one side was that of which the dispensationalists were aware. They knew nothing about the Zionism. And on the other side, the Zionists probably would have laughed at most of the dispensationalists.
They certainly would have, and you perceived that very well.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, he was involved with Samuel Untermeyer in the Lotos Club in New York. And that fact alone would tend to explain the heavily Zionist influence on his writings.
Yes, Mr. Untermeyer was the most prominent Zionist bagman in America. He basically carried the money around.
Right, and he was the one that also established the Jewish seat on the Supreme Court through his influence on Wilson, as he defended Wilson in a paternity case.
Very knowledgeable, yes.
Okay, well,
excellent, Bob.
You recommended
I'm glad.
The best book around in the life of Schofield, that's for sure.
Oh, yes, it really
well,
is.
Will be the beginning, Bob, of a number of calls you'll be making now that you've discovered us, okay?
Yeah, you know, it's an amazing thing
to me.
When I was studying my way out of dispensationalism a number of years ago, I kept scratching my head and saying it's as though the Zionists had this stuff written just to deceive people who would otherwise be Christians. And then I come to find out that that actually is what happened. Okay, thank you very much.
Right. Thank you, Bob. All right, spread the word, rbnlive.com. You know, that's true. And when he says that, I know he's sincere because he had to be weaned out of the Schofield Bible, weaned away from this dispensationalism and this Christian Zionism thing, just as people are led astray and weaned into it, you know?
Exactly.
Absolutely. It's a slow process. A quick withdrawal can be disastrous, but... And let's take a call from Rodney in Texas. Hello, Rodney.
Well, good evening, Rick, and good evening to your guest, Chuck.
Happy to be here.
Chuck, I appreciate your information this evening. I have a scriptural question. And if you could give me some references, I sure would appreciate it. Now, here's my question. There are a lot of people out there who believe that in the Synoptic Gospel, Jesus, when he was speaking to the true Christians, he made this statement, "Separate yourself from among them." There are many people out there who believe that he was talking about blacks separating themselves from whites and other colors, basically keeping yourself divided. My question to you, Chuck, is that true?
Well, I don't think Jesus showed any signs of he. If you go to the book of Galatians, where he talks about there is no Jew or Greek, Jew or Gentile, all are brothers in God. It's in the third chapter, on through the sixth chapter. The whole book of Galatians is about Christians being together based upon belief and following, and not upon any other factors, not upon race, not upon genealogy, not upon DNA, not upon any of these things. And I think you have to grasp at straws to find anything that where Jesus ever took a racial position, where Jesus ever placed one race over another race. It's true that there were predominant races that was there, and that most of the people he dealt with were fallen away from the house of Israel. They were the lost sheep from the house of Israel, the once the once Israelites who had just simply lost it. They didn't have it anymore. They were dominated by the Pharisees, and the Pharisaic line of thought was the corruption of their day, and we basically have the same corruption in our day, only today we call it evangelicalism or Judeo-Christianity.
Yeah.
But it's really Phariseeism. It's the same thing, and Jesus faced it, and he opposed it, and we need to oppose it.
Yes, and I just wanted to add now...
And by the way, I'm not a theologian, so I don't know the scriptures upside down and backwards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
right,
a student of the passages that have been corrupted
mm-hmm. right.
in order to change our minds, and that's basically what we concentrate on. So I do the best I can otherwise.
But I agree with you. You were giving some... good sound advice on a lot of these Bibles. The Catholic Douay Bible comes to mind. There are many out there who they footnote their Bible very. It's almost more footnotes in the Bible than there are scriptures.
Right.
And I agree with you. I think that takes away from the scriptures. And in fact, in Revelations 22, verse 18 through 20. God says, cursed is the one who takes away or add to the scriptures. So when you gave the advice, you know, to avoid looking at these, not necessarily footnotes, but these italicized phrases in between the scriptures, I really think that's good sound advice.
Even in his day, Cyrus Schofield did not dare come out and refute or contradict any of Jesus' words.
Mm-hmm.
But as time went on, the Oxford Press did. They simply changed and updated the footnotes to become more and more aggressive. And now you have other writers, such as John MacArthur, who has a Bible study. He has a John MacArthur study Bible that has a record for footnotes. I think it has 1,000 pages of footnotes or 800 pages, something like that. And in some of those, he directly refutes what Paul says and what Jesus says. He just simply says this is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The Oxford Press has done that too in the 25th chapter.
And then they were using the corrupt text too of the Westcott and Hort text, I believe, as well. That had to be brought out rather than the original Textus Receptus.
I wanted to add to what you were saying about crossing out these italicized phrases in between the scriptures. That's another good piece of sound advice, because when you read, even if you don't actually read the italicized phrases or footnotes in between the scriptures, subliminally that gets into your mind. And just like you said earlier, Rick, these things tend to slip into people's teaching and their mindset, and they will come out if in fact the person is talking in a casual conversation. These things will tend to slip out,
mm-hmm.
and they're not true.
Well,
I do appreciate.
All right, Rodney, thank you very much for the call. What happens is people pick up the nomenclature without realizing it.
I might toss something in. We have a couple of pieces we've written called The Sheep and the Goats, which comes from Matthew 25.
Right.
And there's one place that if you go read the footnotes of Schofield that they inserted, they simply changed the subject for Jesus for him. In midstream, they changed the subject and just diverted him into a different path. And he didn't change the subject. They came along and changed it for him and announced that he was talking about something entirely different than what he was talking about. So most of these... Most of the additions between the lines between the verses
mm-hmm.
are totally harmless and are just sort of guides and they wouldn't hurt anything, but about one out of 20 or 30 or 40 is very well designed to change the way people think.
Well, the problem, see, on a more practical level, without getting into all the interpretations of Scripture and what it means and what it doesn't mean in terms of ethnicity, race, tribe, or what have you, the problem is that these militant so-called Christian Zionists today are so in your face. I hear them. I hear them call talk radio. I hear them screaming and screeching and hollering and ranting, and you don't hear any love in their voices. All you hear is this incredible fixation with this state of Israel, where they have actually come out and endorsed wholesale murder in the name of God. And that, as you said earlier, is the real clincher for people looking at religion today, looking at Christianity, and saying, if that's what it's about, I want no part of it. And, you know, it's not just humanistic reasoning. God is not, you know, inhumane in that sense. God is not, you know, unreasonable. God says, let us come and reason together. You know, and we are supposed to be a reflection of him in the flesh. We are supposed to be a mirror image of God. We are not supposed to be working the seeds of the devil. Yet these so-called Christians, Chuck, are saying things, and I've heard them say it. If the choice came between Israel and America, they would go and fight for Israel.
Yes. Kay Arthur said exactly those words, and she is the head of Precept Ministries, and that's the largest Bible study group perhaps in the world. It's certainly one of the two biggest, and is in 60 countries, and people buy hundreds of tons of literature from these people and conduct Bible studies in their homes and churches, and this is exactly what they're teaching them. And Kay Arthur said that very thing.
So they're establishing a fifth column, basically, in every country.
Mm-hmm, true.
I mean, that's kind of scary when you think, we talk about fifth columns, you know, in the wars that we've had, but here, God forbid, I mean, not that we are likely to, but in the event that things should turn around and we get a president who decides he's not going to live by the Israeli code and he manages to escape a death sentence, things change and we have a war, these people would line up solidly behind Israel, no matter what they do or who they kill.
That's actually true in a lot of cases, and that's exactly why we need to keep doing what we're doing. Rick,
yeah.
And I really appreciate what you're doing. Good guests on your program.
Yeah.
Good.
We try the best we can to bring them all out.
Wonderful
and debate.
Sponsors. One of your sponsors, Willis Carto, actually came out to Jerry Falwell's place and helped picket there. American Free Press.
Excellent.
He was there personally.
Yes, he would
Wonderful
be.
Man.
He's a devoted individual, absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is very important to note, men like that who offer an alternative in the media and others as well, though we not, don't agree with everything they say or do. You know, we had Ted Pike and his ministry, and they bring out a lot of good information, a lot of good stuff that people need to know. And it's documented. It's not stuff that we just say. It's stuff that we can back up. And that's where the Zionists get nervous because, you know they can control most of the mainstream media. But the alternative media and the study through the Internet is something they can't quite get their hands on. And that's what they're trying to do. Because if the American public should wake up, should see the truth about what our tax dollars are doing and this theology is doing, there might very well be a coup d'etat, you know, or something pretty revolutionary happening, Chuck.
Rick, it's awfully important for people to realize that the evangelical celebrity Christians, media Christians, are part of the captured media. It is a media source, a very powerful media source, and it is the most Zionist wing of the Zionist media is the Christian right, and these people are blessed with tremendous access to the airwaves and they are being used to carry out these purposes.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting when Pat Robertson makes a ridiculous statement, you know, or when he says that God might punish Ariel Sharon for giving up land rather than for stealing land, and the media don't criticize that.
Right.
They just criticize the idea that God would punish poor Ariel Sharon. You know, it's amazing how they walk in lockstep and yet pretend to be opponents. It's just absolutely amazing, you know.
So we have a big job cut out for us.
Well, that's all right. You know the story of Goliath, right?
Right.
You know what happened.
Right.
Davy and Goliath. All right. Let's take some more calls. 800-313-9443. And Mike in Arizona, you are next on the program.
Hello.
Yes, you are on the air, Mike.
Hi. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
Sure.
Switch on. I was impressed by your comments a few moments ago about how these alleged Christians just seem to lack compassion. They've lost, if they ever had, the ability to say, how would I feel if I woke up in the shoes of some Arab living over in Iraq and found that I had a dictator over me who was installed with the help of the CIA, and then suddenly I found that I was being bombed. Allegedly to bring democracy to my country. They seem to have lost that capacity to empathize with other people, which I think is pretty critical in anyone, and especially a Christian. But I wanted to add a little bit to your answer to Dorothy.
All right.
I think part and parcel of this deceit is the King James edition of the Bible. I think you know, many of these dispensationalists will say, well, which version of the Bible are you reading? And invariably they cling to the notion that the King James is the only valid version of the Bible, and I think that's important to this deception, because it, the King James English back in 1611 or whenever it was,
right,
is very hard for most people today to grasp. And so, you know, it's not
I think that's
that
because most people today can't read, you know.
Right.
Because of the public school system more than anything, not because it was automatically complicated. But, you know, you make a valid point, and there are problems with the King James, obviously, in the translations. And what the words of the meanings really meant at the time.
Sure. So. But the, I was going to suggest that even the New King James,
yes,
which is updated a bit.
Worse.
Sorry?
It's worse than the old King James in
you
some
so?
Respects. I think so, yeah.
Well,
I think there have been a lot of problems with it. And the reason the update sometimes is not because of the language. It's because look who's buying these publishing houses, as Chuck said, and also look at the opportunity to sneak in some new translations that weren't in the original Greek and Hebrew.
Yeah. Well, you're right to be suspicious. It's just, I think, like I said, be very suspicious of people who think that there's one and only one edition that qualifies as the Word
right,
of God.
Right. That's true. Thank you very much, Mike. All right. Good point. Chuck, did you have any comment on that?
Well, yeah, I do. I do. A small one, and I agree. The King James edition is fine, and I read it and use it. And but Schofield, the Schofield Study Bible is written over the format of a King James edition. They started out with a King James Bible. They tore the pages out, and then they wrote the footnotes to the pages.
There you go.
And I read, and they corrupted the King James Bible.
That's
so,
the whole point. You see,
yeah.
they weren't going to take the time. I know there was no. You know, good news for modern man, let's say, but
right,
as far as the New English Version of the Bible or the NIV, you know, they were going to take something like that. They take something that was trusted, something that people had, right, people
absolutely
had faith in, and then corrupt it. And
there
that's what these Zionists behind him and Scanfield brings out. That's what they had in mind.
Clever in every way. Clever
yes
in every way.
Absolutely. Let's take another call here. There's time for you, all of you online. Chris in Round Rock. Hi, you're on the program.
Hey, what's up, guys? I got a quick question, and then I'll listen off air.
Sure.
Okay, the exploding Mormon movement. How is that being used right now?
The Mormon movement? Chuck, do you have any comments?
The Mormon movement is actually older than the evangelical church. Did you ever think about that?
Mm-hmm.
And Mormonism started about 1830,
right,
and the evangelical movement was imported from England about the same time. They almost were twins. And if you look at how the Mormon communities voted, Salt Lake City, for instance, it was the largest pro-Bush landslide in the country. I think 85% of the people in Salt Lake City voted for George W. Bush because he was a Republican but also a born-again Christian. What I'm saying to you is the Mormon movement is really part of the dispensational movement. It's just different. It's a different kind of corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of wonderful Christian people who are spending their lives trying to change a few million Mormons.
Mm-hmm.
We think we should change a few million Mormons and also a lot of millions of evangelicals. And so we really see the Mormon problem as just another offshoot of the evangelical problem, even though I agree that there are a lot of differences and so on. But in terms of Christ's work, they both need to get down and just concentrate and read the scriptures themselves and study the Bible and shed the other books that they use.
Mm.
The Mormon religion is, of course, a lot of footnotes to a King James Bible.
That's interesting.
And so we don't see much difference.
I've known a lot of Mormons, you know, and they all have different views and on certain things. when it comes to Zionism, these people I've known have been very anti-Zionist. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting because, you know, the Mormon Church and how it was founded and many of its theological errors, of course, you know, the black race and the Satan and all of this, the way they've taught things has been very, very, very seductive in a way. So about his phone number or a way to contact him, Chuck, would you do that?
Sure. Our phone number is 480-947-3329.
Mm-hmm.
480-947-3329. The website is WHTT.org. The Wednesday night Bible study is interactive. People do call in, in a limited way, but in some cases, and it's at 9 o'clock Eastern time on Wednesday nights. And everything I've talked about is either there in written form or in audiovisual form, mm-hmm, if you go to the website.
Mm-hmm. And a lot more than that.
And
by
a lot
the
more.
Way.
Well,
all right, let's take our call. Final call from Joe. Hello, Joe in Rhode Island.
Hello, Rick. How are you?
Good.
Hi, Chuck.
Hi, Joe.
How are you, buddy?
I'm fine, thanks. I'm having
a good time.
I'm having a good time with you guys.
Yes, I'll say, yes. Great program.
Yes.
In light of the fact that John the Revelator was taken to the last day of this age, you might say in some circles that he was a time traveler. You know, he went from the Isle of Patmos.
Right.
And came to the last day of this age, and he saw things that were revealed to him that probably we're seeing today that he saw, because we're living in that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Revelation 13, it says that the whole world chased after the beast.
Mm-hmm.
Beast meaning the one world system. And in light of the fact that that was the case, I'd like to ask you, the two witnesses in Revelation 11, what do you think they were bringing forth and teaching that got them in so much trouble that they would be killed in the streets of Jerusalem? And, of course, they would rise 3 days later. Do you have any idea of what they would be teaching that would bring that much wrath upon them?
I don't know, but I think that the kind of things that all of us are teaching today are challenging the beast today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this that when Jesus was there with those guys, they knew what it was like to be persecuted. And if you go to the 18th chapter of Revelations, it talks about coming out of her,
right.
Come out of her, my people.
Yes.
And my own thinking is that if that's a lesson to us at all, it's a lesson to come out of the church today. But my thought is that we need to not become too focused on how the prophecy all shakes out. We need to think about this. If Jesus was going to return tomorrow, or it was going to be 1,000 years, it should not matter in the way we spend our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Rick Adams would not spend his life any different if he knew it was going to be tomorrow, or if he knew it was going to happen 1,000 years from now, or not at all.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at it that way, I believe that we'll find ourselves following him. That's right. The quest that we should all be on.
Well, that chapter 18 is a very important chapter, like all the chapters, right, Joe?
Yes, it is, Rick.
Come out from among them and be separate, saith the Lord, from the spirit of Antichrist. And that spirit is alive and well today, that's for sure. We're out of time, gentlemen. Thank you, Joe, and thank you
great
very
job,
much.
Thank you,
Joe. Thank you, Charles. Charles Carlson, it's my pleasure
God
having
bless.
You back. We'll have you again.
All right.
Keep up the great work.